And I mean, like, no stopping, barely stopping, maybe coffee break, I don't know. And we hustle to and from all these stores. We have a list, usually. We kind of know what we're looking for, what stores we've gone to over the years, what kind of deals they're going to have, what we need. So we know where we're going. We navigate all of that. We bring a minivan or an SUV because we fill it up pretty much. And, you know, we have to, like, we'll go to, like, five stores, quick run to the van or, the car, drop everything off, keep going. Do that on and off all day. And after we've hit every store that we think is on our list, we head out and our feet are so tired and our wallets are very empty. And it's something that I really enjoy and I look forward to it every year, even the 5 a.m. part. And it's something that I've grown to love. And so today I wanted to turn to a passage about a young man who also loves something. So we're going to read from Matthew 19, verses 16 through 22. I'll be reading from the NIV. It'll be up on the screen, but if you want to follow along, you may. So just then, a man came up to Jesus and asked, "Teacher, what good thing must I do to get eternal life?" "Why do you ask me what is good?" Jesus replied. "There is only one who is good. If you want to enter life, keep the commandments." "Which ones?" he inquired. Jesus replied, "You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony. Honor your mother and father, and love your neighbor as yourself." "All these I have kept," the young man said. "What do I still lack?" Jesus answered, "If you want to be perfect, go sell your possessions and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come, follow me." When the young man heard this, he went away sad because he had great wealth. The NRSV actually translates that last line as "he went away grieving." So not just a sadness, but like a deep hurt and pain about this idea of giving away his possessions. And I think this is a common story. We've most likely heard it before. And when I hear this, that it's a guilt wells up in me. This idea that would I be able to give away everything I had if Jesus asked me to? But what I really want to focus on today is this conversation that's happening, and the young man specifically. He's a thinking person, just like us. He approaches Jesus wanting to know what he needs to do. He wants to know how to be a good disciple. He's looking for the correct information. And if he knows what to do, then he'll be all set. He can follow the rules, and he can enter into eternal life. But he doesn't take into account that just having the right information, knowing what to do, doesn't mean you'll actually follow through on doing it. And because that requires a habit to form some sort of consistency in what you're doing. So Jesus essentially says to follow the commandments. That seems pretty easy, right? I can probably not murder someone. That seems fine. I can probably do that. I can probably not lie or be kind to my neighbor. Those are all things I can do. It's a very clear list of do's and don'ts. And it suits the part of our brain that just wants to have, like, to know the information, to think about things. But then the young man asks that additional question, "What do I still lack?" And that makes me pause, because I want to know why he asked the question. He had an answer, a clear one. Jesus gave him an answer. So I want to know why he felt compelled to continue to press onward. And I think that if I were him, I would have stopped and just said, "Great. I'm done. I've done those things. I can move on with my life." Because it was clear. It was easy. But we are lovers. We're feeling and desiring people. And I wonder if Jesus' answer felt a little too simplistic, even to him, because he was already doing those things. And maybe he just felt or knew that a simple list of do's and don'ts wasn't quite sufficient enough. So then Jesus tells him to sell everything, which is kind of a big switch, all of this great wealth, and follow him. And he's asking him to give it all away, drop everything, and follow him. That's what this man is lacking. And it's such a life shift, right? He's asking him to change his entire life. And it's not only about selling the possessions, but then he says to give it to the poor. So there's no backup plan here. It's not like he can sell his stuff, stash the cash, follow Jesus, and be like, well, things go poorly. I'll just head back home. I've got my extra back here that I can come back and make a life for myself. So at this point, this is when the young man walks away, grieving. And this is the point I want to make. When someone asks us what we truly love, we know the right answer. We know that there's something we should love. But the rich man wouldn't have been asking the question if he didn't really want desperately to do the right thing and live the right life. He clearly wanted that. And he probably thought he was capable of doing whatever Jesus told him he had to do, which might be why he asked again, I've done these things. What else is there? He thinks he is capable. However, the rich man realizes when he is grieving over being asked to give away his possessions that what he thinks he wants most is not actually true. His wealth is actually what he wants, hence how grief-stricken he is, and eternal life isn't actually what he wants most. He is worshiping something, and he didn't even realize it until he was asked to give it all away. So how does this happen? How do we start to love something that we never intended to or that we even really know about? And the reality is that things are shaping us without us even really knowing about it or acknowledging it. And so much of what we love is hidden in us without our knowledge. And much like the young man who didn't really understand the love he had for his wealth until he was asked to give it all away, we have loves that we aren't fully aware of until they're threatened. And these things that are shaping us are called rival liturgies. And liturgy is a big, kind of scary word. It can mean a lot of things. And when we're talking about like a capital L liturgy, we're talking about what the institutional church has agreed upon for how we do worship and practice and how we do sacraments and things like that. But it can also be more flexible. And we can talk about liturgy in a more common sense when we say that it's something that's more formative or a love-shaping ritual, as James Smith puts it in his book, You Are What You Love. And when we talk about a love-shaping or formative ritual, suddenly we can find liturgies in all sorts of places in our lives, and sometimes these are rival liturgies. They're working against where our heart should align. And we can find examples of this in our own lives. And I think one good example, since we're coming out of Christmas, is that when someone asks us what Christmas is all about, we know the right answer to give. We coach our kids on giving the right answer. I mean, it is it's intrinsic in us to just know exactly what we should say if someone should ask that question. But then we see pictures of Christmas trees on social media that look like this. And this is obviously a very ridiculous example. This is a woman who gave 100 presents each to each of her three children. So I don't do that. But something as simple as a Christmas tree can get us to start asking questions about what we truly love and what we really want. And when I look at this tree, as much as it blows me away, and I think it's clearly excessive, I still start to question whether I should have gotten my kids more things. Are they going to be disappointed on Christmas morning? Did I get them what they really wanted? Are they going to compare with their friends and find that the toy that they got is better than whatever my kids got? And that whole thing, I just start kind of having this moment of like panic. And so when someone is asking me about Christmas, I know the right answer. But then I see all the commercials and all of the emails and all the other Christmas trees on social media that you can find that you know, and people just trying to sell me a bunch of stuff. And all of a sudden, something else is forming me. Something else becomes what I want most in terms of Christmas. And Black Friday is the same kind of thing. I love Black Friday. I enjoy it. Part of it is being with my mom, my sisters, and laughing and just spending time together for hours without our children. It's wonderful. But another part is that I get to bring home a lot of new cool things because I like new stuff. And the entire mall is set up in a way that shapes my experience and is formative for me. And especially if you go into a mall that has a roof on it, it's set up in a way that you lose complete track of time. There's always bright lights. There's no clocks. Now, cell phones change that a little bit. But still, there's just a sense that you could be there for hours and you wouldn't even know it. And there are brightly colored signs in all of the windows, like with all the different sales that are happening. And you start to think, or at least I start to think, I can't afford not to buy it. Like, this is going to be the time when I can get it for the cheapest amount. I'm here. Why not? And everything's super shiny. Like, all the lights are shiny. The windows are shiny. Everything's so bright and, yeah, like, glows. And there's tons of beautiful new clothes and items everywhere. And so even though my intention is to do lots of Christmas shopping for other people on Black Friday, in the end, I just typically end up buying a bunch of stuff for myself and my family. And soon, I'm just starting to believe that I really need all of these things. I need all this stuff that I'm, like, grabbing off of tables haphazardly, thinking, like, yes, $4 for a sweatshirt, perfect, I'll do that. And I'm not even really acknowledging it. And then when I get home with bags full of my stuff, I'm so excited. Like, I walk into the house, and Mike's sitting there, and I'm like, you won't even believe it. And then I just start unloading. And as I'm unloading, I just start to think about how much money I've spent, and that starts to overwhelm me. And then I just think about all the stuff I have to put away. Like, I have to find places for all this stuff, and I have to take all the tags off, and I have to wash it all. And so the mall and the practice of shopping on Black Friday unconsciously shapes me. Even if I do acknowledge that I don't need certain things, I still end up falling into the trap somewhere along the line. And with all that being said, I still really enjoy it and will do it every year because it's so much fun. And I do end up getting a lot of great things, some of the things that I need. But acknowledging that it's still shaping me is at least helpful. And things can shape us even when we think we have complete control. I think magazines are a good example of this. When you're standing in line, waiting to get your groceries paid for, or whatever you're doing, which I realize it's like my worst nightmare. I hate waiting in line. So as we're standing there, perusing the covers, looking at the gossip, figuring out what new fitness trends there are, what's the coolest new clothes, what things I should be doing in my house, I immediately do acknowledge that, like, all these women or all these men are airbrushed. No one looks like this in real life. This is a whole bunch of work being done behind the scenes. This isn't actually what's going on. And that no one could really look that flawless. But I'm still seeing the beautiful new clothes, and I'm still seeing these really fit bodies, and this definition of beauty is being presented to me, what this is supposed to be. And even though I think it's meaningless, and if you ask me, I would say this is meaningless, I still think it's shaping us, or it's shaping me at least. I can't look at those and not have something happening in my mind. And it makes me evaluate my body, or my clothes, or whether I'm parenting the right way. And I'm wondering if I'm cool enough or I'm trendy enough. And something I would say I have complete control over is, in fact, unconsciously shaping me and the way I feel about myself and the way I feel about people around me. And these rival liturgies are all around us, like the magazines. And there's so many things that are seeking our attention and sometimes even compelling us to essentially worship whatever that item is that that's trying to be sold to us. And I think it can just drown out whatever God is trying to say to us or whatever God is trying to align our heart to. So Chris mentioned last week in his message, and I think it's worth looking at again, this verse from Romans. And it says, "Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." These rival liturgies are the patterns of the world that form us in unexpected and unconscious ways. And that when I read this verse, I'm reassured that Paul, 2,000 years ago, talking to these new Christians, is telling them not to conform to the patterns of the world, and we need to be reminded of that too. But I do think we're being bombarded in new and different and bigger ways. So Paul is urging us to seek the correct way of worshiping, but in order to do that, we need to ask ourselves some questions. If I am what I love, do I love what I think? What am I worshiping? What do I spend my time caring about, worrying about? Where do I spend my money? Where do I spend my time? So there's a handout that has the recalibrate symbol on it. And it has a bunch of questions about our routines and our lives on a daily basis and where these rival liturgies can creep up. And so we're going to spend some time reflecting on that. You can read through and pick one, or you can find something else that you want to focus on, but we're going to spend a few minutes in silence doing that.